Hello, we're on the air, always 24/7 at bbsradio.com. As you are listening to Kathy Cook, Bright Lights Pathfinders, I'm on Station 1, Thursday evening at 6 o'clock Pacific Time. That's 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Everyone is a bright light searching for the Pathfinder's way. So listen up and tune in and let your journey begin. Listen to all the hosts, listen to the music, listen to the guest hosts. You will get a message no matter which way you go with www.bbsradio.com. Oh, and P.S., you're in for a rude awakening when you listen to bbsradio.com, because this is where it happens, this is where it's at, and this is where all the messages of searching for your inner self to the brightest light that you could ever find in your pathway. That's all I have to say. Thank you for listening, and I am off to you. Hello, we're on the air. This is Kathy Cook, Bright Lights Pathfinders, and tonight I have a guest host with me, Mike Seeley, and he is from my hometown. He is a developer, a builder, and we are going to discuss this evening about the economy, how it's affecting the builders, how it's affecting the housing industry. And hello, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing good tonight. How about you?
Doing well, thanks. Been running around pretty rapidly here, so... Thank you for the last moment notice. As usual, you always come in.
Well, I appreciate that. Glad to help
you. Yeah. Mike and I went to school together, and we're alumni of East Mecklenburg, but we are Charlottians, and he is a huge developer here in the Charlotte area and the surrounding area. Would you like to tell a little bit about yourself, Mike? Mike Seeley.
Well, basically, I have a background in doing I guess what you term some of the more high-end construction. I started my career to where I was involved in projects such as hospitals, industrial plants, somewhat of a mix of the higher-end commercial business. And over the years, I migrated to where I started doing high-end residential mixed-use projects and basically focusing on the residential market, particularly the last 6 years.
Residential marketing?
Residential marketing meaning okay. Single-family housing to a large extent, which if you watch the news, it tends to be somewhat of a focus in the mortgage markets, the banking industry, amongst the various building publications. But, you know, there's a lot of focus in regards to the economy, what's been taking place within the building industry itself.
Okay. I was going to buy a house about a year and a half ago. I'm just going to ask you a hypothetical of my life. And I got bombarded with people, like, hurry up. So I started looking at the Dow Jones and Fannie Mae and you know, just everything, because I just wanted to see what was going on. And bam, bottom just hit. What was that all about?
Well, I don't think it was something that was so much unexpected. I mean, you've got to look at the residential building sector as a whole, and it is very much a cyclical business. So it goes through a period of expansion, and then it goes through a period of contraction as the building community they do their best to try to forecast where the needs are at. But there's always been a tendency to where you can get a little more product than there is market, and you start dealing with an absorption issue. The difference this time, there's probably several factors involved with that. I think one of the biggest changes you saw in the residential sector, it's almost like the syndrome that took place in the dot-com era. You started seeing a push to move from businesses that tended to be somewhat fragmented, industries that were fragmented, and part of the concept was taking the residential marketplace and working through roll-ups to where you took the small individual builder in these given marketplaces, the larger markets ranging from, you know, Atlanta, Miami, Las Vegas, et cetera, Charlotte included, and you started seeing a play to where people with corporate backgrounds started to create these publicly traded home building companies. And with that, if you understand, when you form a publicly traded company, you have shareholders you answer to, and in turn, you're looking to pay a dividend. So with that said, you started seeing the the growth to where the lots, the home construction, the bottom line is there just ended up being just an overwhelming amount of inventory that got built out there over a period of time. And it's a case to where the small builder serves probably more of his own brake man because of the fact that he's limited by his financial resources and his ability to get construction loans. Whereas a nationally traded company has shareholders that made an investment for a return and gives them great capacity to buy lots and do speculative type construction. So it just led to a gross overpopulation of housing in this country, and that's what's led to a large portion of the problem.
Wow. That's a lot for me to understand, except for, you know, that there's the active listeners out there. If you want to give a call in and ask some questions, I'm going to give the call in numbers right quick, Mike, if you don't mind.
Sure.
It's 877-876-5227. There is USA and Canada, which is 888-815-9756. If you have a plan, the direct line is 530-876-3222. So you can call in and ask Mike Seeley any questions that you want to ask him. Do you have a website or anything that you would like to give out, or they can contact you on any place like my Facebook, your Facebook, or?
Well, they can use the Facebook site. As far as the website goes, we basically take our individual projects, and each one of those projects we designate a website for that individual project itself. But the best way to get a hold of me would, of course, be through Facebook, and it is set up directly to my name, so they can make contact through that.
Okay. Mike, you said that you buy up a lot of land, and then you produce it into different residential neighborhoods. Is that correct?
That's our primary focus, yes.
And you were getting ready to, I even posted in the TNT News Trader a couple of weeks ago or a week or so ago that one that was on Weddington, where they're going to, the Walton Street, they were talking about the outhouse, you know, putting the outhouses in. It was a cute little thing. Do you remember?
Oh, the cartoon that you saw regarding the outhouse on a given development for sewer. Yes, I saw that. Sure did.
Yeah, they're getting ready to develop. I know behind my mother's house, she, you know, was way in the country at one given time. She has 22 to 44 acres of land, and she has been built commercially all around her. But my dad stated to her to never sell, and they're offering up to 275,000 an acre, even to this day, even though the economy and everything is shut down. But I see that the commercial, it's Harris Teeter and banking, the banks that are going up around her.
Well, it really, you know, it depends. I mean, sometimes you'll see the rooftops will follow the residential construction. You'll see the studies that will look to support the number of rooftops in a given area so that they know that it justifies based on some type of economic model, depending on whether it's a grocery store chain or a big box type hardware store. Those projects typically develop where they see growth, a historical growth perspective, or they see a growth curve that shows that with the developers putting housing in there, that the demand for their services for that given retail shop, grocery store chain, whatever the case may be, would be supported.
I see. I understand now.
Okay, so it's all numbers driven.
That's why they're as well widening the road to be able to handle the traffic that's coming out through there.
Right. So, you know, Charlotte's no different than any other community in the country when it comes to that. I mean, basically your growth is somewhat dictated by, you know, your availability of land. It's dictated by your levels of absorption. It's always a case to where the numbers never lie, but you've got to have a situation where by putting product up, you can't have a concept that if you build, they will come. You really got to number base it to make certain that you've got the availability of the clients, of the buyers that will absorb the houses. So, but, you know, if your family's got product in that sector, and again, the Charlotte market, what's interesting, you talk about the stoppage. It's really not a stoppage. I mean, it's a case to where we do have a slowdown. Prior calamity in this market has caused the same thing to take place, to where you get a downturn in residential construction, you get a downturn in commercial, but probably the biggest factor that's different this time versus those other downturns is just the flat unavailability of money right now for the building community to build anything. The banks are not issuing loans for speculative building, which for builders, if you go to a given community, the large portion of the homes that are built are built on speculation, not built on contract.
Right. So these larger homes, if you were an individual home, like if I wanted to buy some land and go and buy, build a home, I would more than likely get a loan than the contractors or builders, right?
Right, and probably what you do right now is you would probably go what they call a construction perm type product, which would give you a loan with your builder to execute construction on your own property and or property that belongs to the builder. But that is a healthy portion of the building business right now. It's still moving forward to where people are doing customs. It's just the speculative side, putting up product, that is at a huge standstill right now. So they've got to get the inventory that's existing nationwide back right now. The numbers need to decrease and then let the demand peak back up, you know, to balance itself out in time. It's just that this particular time, because of the number of moving parts, with the fact that you got oversaturation of the homes, you've got a calamity in the mortgage markets, you got a calamity on Wall Street, you got all these moving parts that are impacting a very important part of our economy, and it happens to be residential construction.
When what I was going to ask you is, when a person is in a situation where their loan is inflated, what is it called?
When their loan is inflated?
When their loan escalates upward, a balloon, I believe it's called a balloon loan.
Yeah, you have loans that are basically adjustable rate mortgages, and typically those can be purchased. And I'm not a mortgage broker, but typically you'll see those on a 3-year to 5-year period, and in turn, at the end of that 3-year to 5-year period, you have a balloon that's a call on the note, and essentially you work through refinancing at that time. And or the thought is, and where people have typically purchased their homes, I think the last statistic that I saw had the average homeowner in their home 7 years, and I could be wrong with that, but that's maybe an older statistic.
Oh, my goodness.
The bottom line is, you know, you've always got a turnover. Well, you and I growing up here and being local to the area, natives to a large extent, I mean, you know, our families did not and friends did not move quite that often. A lot of them did not, but a lot of them did. But you have a constant turnover in housing, people that are moving, and in turn, you know, that type product in the past has been somewhat suitable to address that, plus it provided a lower house payment for the individuals. I think the bigger issue is what they got away from and the qualification factors. You know, they use a percentage of your income to qualify for loans, but they started moving to where they were allowing the loan-to-value ratio to go up, and in turn they would finance a higher portion of the house. So I think where the pendulum has swung is we're not going to see anywhere near that in the near future in the residential mortgage market. I think you're going to see people having to put up real money, hard money, in order to buy their houses.
Also, I read somewhere not too long ago that they needed to blow up around 1 million homes in this United States, or get rid of them to get this problem settled, that are the brand new homes that haven't even been completed yet. Have you heard anything about that?
Those numbers are out there. I mean, you can get those from National Home Builders Association. There's several places to pull that information down, and I don't know the exact number. I know in passing articles I've seen numbers that are in the several hundred thousand, but as far as providing you an exact number, I don't know. But the inventory itself is a significant inventory. There's actually reports out there that would take each individual market. There was a recent report that was out that was showing Charlotte as an example. One report was showing when the recovery comes about that Charlotte as a whole would be one of the faster markets to return with that. There's also reports out there that will tell you how each given market is holding in regards to its pricing, whether they're seeing an increase in housing prices, a decrease in housing pricing. And Charlotte, quite candidly, even with all the calamity, I think we were one of the last ones into the market when it came to the issues, and hopefully we'll be one of the earlier ones out. But there's a huge number out there of homes that are sitting. There's no doubt that we've got a lot of inventory that's going to need to be absorbed, and that doesn't address the fact that you've got the bigger issue with the economy, you know, in the situation it's in. People losing their jobs, and of course their homes themselves being threatened with foreclosure right now.
So when let me try to understand this. We have the bank that holds the notes, that holds the loans. We have the families that borrow from the bank. Then we have the builders that borrow from the bank. And then, so then if the bank stops giving and takes the homes and doesn't loan the money to the builders, then what do you foresee with the bank situation?
You hear the politicians say that's above my pay grade. I'm not so certain I can address that point as far as, you know, where the banks are at in regards to that. But what I do know is the banks have taken the position, if you're a builder and your interest is in buying a lot, if your interest is in building a home on a lot that you presently have debt service on, you can have a lot. Typically what builders do is they have lots in inventory because it's a trying to think of a simple way to put it, but basically if you don't have the bait on the hook from a business standpoint, in other words, if you don't have the lot in a given area,
right.
You don't have the ability to put a house on that. So the builders will typically keep a certain amount of lots in inventory as you see the market with a sign that says build to suit or a lot being for sale. Many, many times that lot has a builder that owns that lot, and he's got the purpose of building someone's home.
That is excellent information to know. Another question I have is the restoring of a home versus building a home. Is there a lot more involved money-wise or, in the long run? I'm restoring a home right now, plus I'm deciding to build.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe we touched base on that a couple of nights ago, and you said you had, 400 acres or so or more. But I was just wondering, what is the best way to go with a person? Let's say the people, just an average Jeslo person like me, is just looking to get out of this situation that I'm in, where my home needed total, restoring because it was old. And do I need to sink money into something like that, or do I need to go on and build something else?
I can tell you from a personal opinion that I'm an extremely strong proponent of taking what you currently own, and you need to do your homework before you start going through a remodeling process or considering it to understand by doing those additions what the impact may be on your pricing. Again, there's information out there in waves on the Internet. I've seen it myself to where you can understand where the investment, say in upgrading a bathroom, upgrading a kitchen, those are probably the two most critical areas in a home
mm-hmm.
itself. To make a potential investment with an existing home, but those two areas to where it can increase the value of your home yourself. A prime example is my existing home. I moved out of Charlotte proper 20 years ago down into Union County, which is an adjacent county to Charlotte. And at that time, it was thought that 30-minute commute was forever in a smaller city like Charlotte. Well, of course, now you compare that to people that commute in D.C. and Atlanta and other communities. That's a very, very short commute, but bottom line is, I'm looking right now, even with the fact that I can build and I can develop and go out and buy other land and do it for a living, I'm remodeling my house. It ends up being the single biggest investment that I have, and in turn, my interest is in remodeling because I understand how it will enhance the value long term by making various improvements to my individual house. But in turn, each person needs to look at their house as a standalone. And make that determination and, seek that information from their real estate, realtor friends, and from other builders that can provide them information as to the impact by making those improvements.
Do you have any knowledge of, let's say, if I got a little overboard with my kitchen and my bathrooms. Now, I have to downgrade in the rest of the house because I don't want to have the resale value to be the house to be so over and above the neighborhood.
Now you're saying downgrade again. I'm trying to understand.
Well, like the fixtures and the carpet and the paints don't go overboard with the different colors of paint. Just in case I wanted to sell it, because I was going to put patio tile in the front and in the back and a Zen garden and then I decided, wait a minute. What if I wanted to sell this? How would I get that money back out?
Well, again, I go back.
Don't they go by how much a house sells down the street to give you an example of how much your house is worth?
Absolutely. They take a radius and when they're doing the comps, and again, that's not where I'm licensed. It's not my
I'm just talking to you as my friend Mike in school right now.
Right. The bottom line is when they do those appraisals, they take a radius to do those appraisals, and it's not an arbitrary type arrangement, but they're looking for homes that are similar to your homes in design, square footage, and et cetera, how it's appointed. And depending on where you're at within a certain urban area, you may be in a neighborhood to where it ends up where to the homes, the comps are fairly close together, and it's not a threatening situation in the fact of making that investment, because you can put your finger on the given number per square foot pretty easily. But you can start getting a situation like you and I are in, and the comps vary widely. So you've got to do your homework is what it boils down to. But
you've got to upgrade to the houses today.
Well, that's what I'm doing to my present house.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. I was calling everything, and I mean, going to town, Mike. But then I got to thinking, what am I doing? I ripped mine down to the studs, replaced the roof, replaced the boards outside, all the way down to the cement.
Right.
So that's pretty much like rebuilding a whole house. Then I got to look, and my ex-husband, which is a really good friend of mine, father of my children, he is an appraiser, and he said, you might want to take a look at that. And I said, okay.
Well, you can certainly overdo it. I mean, you start looking at the given market. Again, I go back to the example of a house like mine, which is built 20 years ago, and you look at the current market where we're at. To go in and start taking carpet out and putting hardwood floors in and going into your kitchen and upgrading to, the current style cabinets that end up being much more furniture grade than what was put together.
That's what I did. I put the tile down, and I put the backsplash, and I put the top-notch ranges and everything in there. But then, I don't want to start chintzing on the carpet and everything, but it's not the money that's bothering me. It's in order for someone else to be able to purchase it. If I decide to sell it, if my family decides to sell it, because my father left me lifetime rights to it, but if we decide to sell it down the road, how do they establish how much that home is worth?
Yeah, they're going to go through a comp process to establish it. In turn, the one thing you need to think about when you're making those changes too is people, and I know this from having a home building company, people can see quality.
Right.
Despite the fact that there's product out there that's inferior each and every day, the bottom line is your buyer can see quality. So he comes into a house and he's seen that you've made the type of appointments that make it somewhat pari passu to market, equal to market, or maybe a little bit better than you haven't gone overboard. They'll look and see what you've put in that house. And I think to a large extent, again, my experience says focus on the bathrooms, focus on the kitchen areas, go with good quality floor coverings. Interior trim really is economical to do, to put in things like your chair railing and some of the heavier appointed ceiling trim. But that it's economical to do, and the bottom line is it really dresses the house up real nice to do that.
Right. And I've got so many questions. I mean, I asked you, 5 minutes before airtime to even be on the show.
I appreciate your short notice here.
Yeah, well, you know me. That's how I always was. Still am. As people know me, all these millions of listeners, they know I don't prepare for a show. I just get out there and do it. It takes the flavor out of the concoction to me. So that's just what I do. Again, I'm going to give out the numbers because I think they're a little shy to be asking these kind of questions because I did not, allow them to. I had several people that were going to be on the show. They never called me back, and they canceled. But anyway, if you're listening out there, Coffee Beanie Queen, Lorna, and Kim, give Mike a call. And all you other active listeners, my active listeners, at 877-876-5227. That's USA and Canada line is 888-815-9756. And the direct line is 530-876-3222. Well, Mike, what would you best be able to give in a few descriptive adjectives and to the universe, because we're talking to the universal World Wide Web. I know you probably only know the Charlotte area, but I'm sure you've done your homework in the whole area. As a matter of fact, Jean Pedro, another friend of ours, I was reading his blog. He was the top blog 10 blogger on the blog thing, and I put him on my Facebook. But he is in Queens or that area. He was doing house swapping.
Well, he's actually a realtor in the Chicago area, if you look at his website.
Right.
That was interesting that he's doing
that. Wasn't that great?
Yeah, apparently he's doing well at it. So kudos for him after many years of not seeing him. But, we've got several people that we went to school with that are related to this industry. And, you know, you look at the numbers in our area, take our county, Union County, as an example. You know, over 30% of the economy in Union County is directly related to construction. So it's a critical part of our machine here that we have that. In Union County, last time I saw a statistic, I think we were still like 7th in the country in new construction. So
really impressive. I didn't know that. I've lived in a 5-mile radius all my life.
Mm.
Isn't that something? And you had those deers running in your backyard the other day.
I do.
They were so gorgeous.
I do.
Did you ever find that buck?
No, I did not. I mean, there's many of them out there, though. I see them each and every day, but in hunting season, they tend to migrate to my property quite heavily because I think they recognize they're being fed here, but they're not threatened here. So it's interesting. I have anywhere from 15 to 20 deer in my yard, front or backyard, at a given time. So it's a wonderful sight to see. And I know people that hunt enjoy hunting, and I'm all for that. But I'm not one that in my own interest, it's not something I do, but those that do it, I know they enjoy it, and we got lots of deer down here.
Yeah. Where do you see the growth in Charlotte going? Do you see it more going to the Waxhaw area or the Unionville area?
Well, actually, neither one for now, and it's really a primary reason why the growth is not going to go in that direction. You're going to see it slow down considerably, unless the given developer builder will accept doing well and doing septic in those given developments. And I state that there's a lot of things you can do with septic that aren't of the traditional mindset. There's some various products out there that are very much green that you can use that are becoming more and more prevalent on property itself. But
I know the word perk, and I know the property has to perk in order to get that done right.
Yeah, they changed that term a little bit because the old philosophy in doing perk is a lot more science to it now, the way they dig the various pits on a given property, and they've got a lot more lateral capability than they used to, but there's a lot more science to it than there was even 20 years ago to determine how you handle your waste management on a given piece of property. So, you know, if you don't have municipal sewer, which tends to be the issue within our given county, there's been capacity problems, and the growth has obviously outpaced their capacity. You know, your other options are to go, as they had prior, that would be septic, and then your third option is to go with a privatized sewer system, which has been attempted before. So,
what happened to my home is that a tree trunk grew into the root system of the sewer.
Well, the roots broke into the sewer, into your line is what it did, right?
Mm-hmm. See, I'm at the T of a street, and there's a manhole right at the street.
Mm-hmm.
And so the main line runs through my property, and I had a big, huge birch tree. And I kept saying, what is going on? You know, because I felt like the house was shifting, but I had like three engineers come out, and this went on for 2 years before we found the problem. There was these huge roots. I'm talking big roots just all down inside underneath the house. And what it had done is somehow there was a leakage, and it had made a little crevice down in there. So, you know, the house had, you know, where it had gotten wet, and then it had sunken the water, per se. And so it had leaned a little bit. So we had to do all this, stuff to the house besides getting the root out.
Yeah, you used to.
So we're built on that. We're built on that stuff, that kind of dirt you're not allowed to build on anymore.
Well, you used to be with your old
starts with a B.
Right. Your old style septic systems, and you go years back, I mean, they would come up with an area somewhat unscientific and basically do an auger type drilling on the lot. They'd pour water into it, and if the water dissipated within 24 hours, it was considered to be, you know, suitable soil. But in everything now, they do a calculation based on the number of bedrooms. They've got various options as to what you can do in the way of conventional, pre-treatment with conventional, non-conventional type systems, pump systems, low-pressure systems, they term it. And then you've got what they term, depending on who you're talking to, but they've got what they call innovative systems, which tend to be a bioseptic type system that ends up being a treatment system that gives you potable water that you atomize either underground on your property. It ends up being dispersing underground, or it disperses above ground, and you can use it for irrigation purposes. But your old systems, I mean, they wouldn't even go to the extent where they would come up with a repair area, which anything you do now, it requires that you have a primary area for that septic line, and then you have a repair area. And then even with the repair area, they've got to understand what technology you can use in that repair area to make certain if your first system fails, what options you may have with a secondary area that may not be as suitable as your primary area. So there's a science to that when it comes to septic.
What about well water and city water?
From a cell standpoint, when you're doing a development, the public prefers to have county water.
Okay.
In our part of the country, county water. Maybe in other parts of the country, it could be city water. But the bottom line is, having municipal water, there's a preference to that. And you have to think about it. You're getting water that's been treated. Obviously, they have a process to make certain that any bacterial, blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line is, you know, our treated water, I think the public has a much higher comfort level getting water that's been treated from the municipality as opposed to having wells individually drilled on their property.
When my son was in school, he's a civil engineer. He's a BA in civil engineering, but he did water and soil as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he was testing for one of his projects. He was testing the different waters. And also, he said with the statistics and statics that he was working on, that if you take a natural habitat that is for mosquito infested and the frogs and all that, you have to put that right back. If you dig up, you know, per se, in a piece of land to develop it, you have to build that back near that area for those, because that is a habitat that helps the environment.
Well, yeah, he's correct with that. That's right.
And he also invented this, what the school patented, where you measure the water for a sprinkler system instead of the sprinkler systems coming on by a timer.
Right, right.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Well, that's done so that you don't obviously waste water.
Yeah, that was a project that he worked on when he was in college.
Yeah, there's a whole host of things out there. They call it LEED certification, but there's a lot of different options right now what can be done to create, you know, a green community. And for instance, using your stormwater runoff, doing what they call a purple pipe type system, but coming up with a reclaim system, for better terms, that allows you to cycle what Mother Nature's created, or in some cases what we've created, even with the waste, and treating the waste to where, with a combination of the stormwater runoff and the effluent, the treated effluent that ends up being potable water, you're using that to go out there and using it to irrigate your properties, what you're doing, and the irrigation ends up being scientifically calculated so you're not dispersing too much. But that, you know, my personal belief is we're going to see a lot more of that, because you take Charlotte as an area, and if you start reading some of the articles that have come out late where the state of South Carolina has sued the state of North Carolina for water rights on the Catawba River, et cetera, our bigger issue is water. It's not sewer. It's the fact that long-term, how are we going to manage our growth and provide water to our various communities? So we've got to be smarter in how we're doing it. There's no doubt about that.
That is so true. Mike, let's go on to a totally other subject.
Okay.
Listeners from our school, and I just want to say thank you very much for all the work that you're doing for getting the alumni together, as well as, you know, having good confidence in me that I believe this alumni 10-year reunion alumni for the East Mecklenburg class, this is going to be pretty well. You think that we should have it at the Panther Stadium?
All I was looking at was a venue that was large enough that if you did a 70s reunion that brought together 10 classes.
Yeah, we had a graduating class of 700 and it was either 48 or 778 for just 74, class of 74.
Right. That's a large class. So if you start trying to pull a reunion together that's going to be multiple classes, and I've been involved with this in another school, you need to have a venue that's large enough to support that. So you start looking at those numbers, and you start pulling in classes in 1970 through 79, give an example, I already showed you another school, you're going to find you have a pretty big crowd that could potentially come out. So you need a venue that works, the bottom line.
Yeah, I've already gotten several people asking, when, you know, just here saying you and I talking back and forth. So we've got to really work on that. I just wanted to get that out there while I had you on the phone.
Okay. Well, this
even if that was off air, Universal World Wide Web, East Mecklenburg is going to be one of the first to have probably 10-year reunions. 10 classes in one place for a reunion.
That'll be huge.
Yeah, it will. It'll be great, too. I tell you what, there's a lot of people out there that are trying to find out how to get in touch with everybody. I know that is for a fact. They probably don't even realize it, and that's why another reason I announced that on www.bbsradio.com, which we are actively talking on and live, because we have a lot of listeners that are all over the universe that probably went to East Mecklenburg, because we are spread out everywhere.
Yeah, from what I've seen, I think we're
Jeff just came in from France. And
yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. He brought me a stone, because, you know, I collect stones from all over, because they're the oldest living thing on the universe that's been here so long. And people say, what can I bring you back? And I say, a stone, because that's a piece of the land, you know.
I'll remember that next time I get a chance to see you, is I'll make certain I pick up a few rocks and bring those to you.
You've got to, but they're real special. You look at them, and they go, oh, that's Kathy's. I have so many. I just got one from John F. Kennedy's grave a couple of weeks ago from Betty Bala's daughter. Remember Betty Bala?
I remember Betty, yeah.
Yeah, and then she also brought me back a dinosaur bone. So I thought that was pretty cool. Oh, and one from Hawaii, a piece of lava. So also, let's get back on subject, you know, me and my ADD self.
I'm hearing you. I'm following you.
I know you are. You're doing a great job. Bunny, the bunny, she's been on the show a lot. You know Bunny and Bonnie.
I do. Yes, I do.
Bunny lost her son nearly 2 years ago in a motorcycle wreck.
I did not know that. I hate to hear that.
You didn't know that. That's okay. But his name was Edward, and he didn't feel a thing because he died on impact. But she's been on the show quite a few times with many different great points of view about, you know, things happening after you've lost a child. So we talk about the difference, Mike, and the way that we were raised compared to today, just like the housing. My mother and father built the house on Sharon View Road for $18,000.
What was that again? For how much?
$18,000 for a 4-bedroom, 2.5-bath house with a playroom.
$18,000
right on Sharon View Road.
1950 what? When did they build it?
It was, I was 4 years old, 1966.
Okay, I was close.
1960. And we lived there for, until I was in the fifth grade. That's how I went to Lansdowne. I went to 1 year in Matthews, Matthews Elementary, and then went to McClinic, and then went to East. So, moved way on out where we started, we're the one of the alumni that started, Charlotte Latin School. I grew up across the street on Country Lane there.
Okay.
But, yeah, so back then it was like way out there to go to visit me. It was like, oh, we're not coming to see you anymore. I kept having to have birthday parties to see my friends. And now it's like that's the middle of town.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's when we moved out of where we're at, it was thought again that we were just absolutely crazy to be leaving the city. And, you know, as the crow flies, maybe we're 18 nautical miles from downtown Charlotte, but when the beltway, for better terms, 485 by designation came in, it changed the whole dynamics of that corridor. But you got to look at Charlotte and the fact that we always were a town that had lots of spokes but no hub. when the hub got installed, all of a sudden it took that area that we know, which ends up tending to be, you could say Independence Boulevard as a starting point, and flipping all the way over to South Boulevard and then taking all the land in between that, you can see the progressive growth to where 90 years ago, 80 years ago, when Myers Park ended up being the community to live in because it was the outskirts of Charlotte. But if you look on the map, it's almost just been like a pie shape to where it's pushed out into that corridor, and the growth has continued in that direction. But the problem now is unless you jump on the 521 corridor, you want to go down Province Road to Waxhaw as an example. You want to take head over from Weddington to the Monroe corridor. The bottom line is, you know, getting the land, with the land prices the way they are, your inability to get water and sewer tend to be a barrier in developing those areas. So the growth is going to end up being more towards the 521 corridor in Lancaster County, South Carolina. And the
4th. That's where we had our first warehouse.
Excuse me?
That's where we had our first factory mattress warehouse.
Really?
Yeah. Right there, Daddy took apart a skating rink.
Mm-hmm.
He used to buy the metals and stuff, and then he would rebuild them. And he put it up near Black Horse Run.
Huh. I know exactly where Black Horse Run's at.
And it's that big warehouse, that metal warehouse. I think it's a metal sheet and rock part.
I know exactly where it's on the right-hand side there as you turn mm-hmm. on to Marvin Road, which becomes Newtown.
Right.
Yeah, I know exactly.
That was one of our first warehouses when we first went into the mattress business from the furniture, because you know we were in furniture first.
Right, yeah. If I recall that, I remember that.
Yeah. So,
But that corridor down there, there's a lot of growth in that area. You know, you start looking at the numbers
Indian
and asking those questions early in the conversation.
Indian land is really growing, Mike.
Huh?
Indian land, where Dad grew up, Indian land territory is really growing.
Indian land's growth is explosive. I mean, actually, you talk about that. I mean, I've got a 400-acre piece that backs up to, it's actually on what they call the neck, but I've got a major project that's been unannounced that is over there, that and it's held up with the current economic situation that it's a mixed-use project, and it'll come about over a longer period of time. But that corridor down there is the hottest corridor in the Charlotte area, and it continues to post positive growth numbers even in these tough economic times.
Well, my aunt, Vicki Barfield, she has Barfield Realty, and she just moved a house, one of the old houses that was in the middle where they were going to work on the road. And she said, you're not going to tear that monument down that's been where, right there where the Marvin line goes into South Carolina, North Carolina line.
Right.
And it was that yellow house. And she moved it over to the old farmhouse of ours, you know, where we grew up.
Hmm.
And so she doesn't develop. She pretty much is just a realtor, but she does some developing as well. That, Dad, let me just give you a little input of what Dad did. He took an old washing machine, two washing machines, and made one good one, sold it, got a couple more, sold it, never spent the profit, and bought a little piece of land. Then he sold that, then bought a bigger piece of land. Then he sold that, bought a bigger piece of land. That's how he, and all the while he took used pieces and appliances and different used pieces of furniture, and that's how he got into the furniture business. That's how he got into the business of developing land. That's how he got into building buildings, because he never spent the profits. And today, the way he's got it for us children, though he passed in 2005, is never to sell any of the malls that he built or anything like that, because it'll always pour in the rent for us, you know, and the children and the generations.
Right, right.
But I'm on restriction, so I don't know. Anyway, I think that was a good idea, you know. And the good old handshake, Mike, you're still like that. You're one of the few that are still like that. Your handshake is as good as your contract. And I value that in you as a person.
You know, I appreciate that. I mean, I actually do a lot of business in that direction. And a lot of I've had calls from some people in Charlotte that are very notable in the business, and they wonder why I'm able to accumulate some of the land positions I have. And it's not just being native, but you hope it's your reputation. It allows you to do that. But, yeah, I do a lot of business with the locals that's on a handshake. We still can do it that way. And, you know, there's also attorneys involved, so it just depends on the opportunity.
It seems like a lot of us still are like that, and it's a lot of our you know, our roots and the good teachers that we had, the morals that we have, and look, you know, and being consistent in our truth, you know. And I'm proud of you. I'm honored to know you, and I value you as one of my great friends, Mike, of all these years, since what, first grade?
Well, I appreciate the compliment there.
Yeah. If you could give the active listeners, they're there. They're just not calling in. They're just being shy because this is a very hard subject for them. What would you give them as an opportunity of being able to know that there is hope out there in the home industry as a new time, first-time homeowner or, you know?
Well, I think what they've got to look at is they've got to look at what history and what history's provided and the fact that we've gone through tough times before when our home ownership, our ability to make a living, we've had economic calamity before where things have not gone well. I mean, you look at us and at our age and our generation, I can recall coming out of high school and a mix between college and working to where it was probably the worst time, one of the worst times to be in the construction business. And that was in that 74, 75 time frame. You had oil prices that were extremely high.
Oh, remember sitting together and just partying because we were waiting on gas?
Oh, two hour wait.
Two, 3 hours over there. We would start at either Greer's store or we'd go all the way up. That would be in Matthews, or we'd go all the way up to Hunter's store. Do we have a call?
Excuse me?
I didn't know if we had a call or if that was your phone.
No,
you have
no,
a call.
No.
Kathy.
Hello, you're on the air.
Kathy, this is Patty Shellen.
Patty Shellen, oh my gosh.
I just want to tell you guys, you're having a very interesting conversation.
Well, thank you. You remember Mike Seeley?
You know, I'm trying to, but no, I really don't.
Mike Seeley, this is Patty. This is Patty Shellen. She has a brother that was a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
And she is Beth Diamond, that's been on the show many times before, and Abby Diamond. Beth Diamond and Mike Diamond's best friend.
Oh, I know Beth real well. Sure do.
Yeah, so you
Patty,
guys are doing...
I'm sorry, I don't recall.
Patty's a farmer. She sings Green Acres in California. She's a farmer.
You know,
oh, really?
I've it's interesting because I'm listening to this real estate conversation, and I've lived in Germany, and I'm now out in California. So I've traveled over 6,000 miles both ways, and I pretty much have a good landscape of it all.
Wow.
Now you've got a view that's totally different than what we've got here in the West Coast and just what I'm reading and hearing. I mean, there's spots out there to where, you know, Charlotte ends up being a shining star with the fact that we've had a downturn, yes, but we're one of the few that can sit back. Our decline in pricing has been very minimal, but there's other parts of the country that are devastated with the housing market and what's taking place, so...
Well, you know, that's true, Mike. I just sold two properties in Charlotte last year, and one property was in... Dilworth, and the other property was in South Charlotte.
Oh, you sold a Dilworth? I want that.
Well, we still have another Dilworth.
But
what was amazing about that is everyone was saying, well, I can't believe that you're waiting so long to do this. And I said, well, I think it'll go up. And actually it did. And the Dilworth property took maybe 3 months to sell, and
you're sitting on gold is what you're doing. I mean, that's a wonderful community to be in, a tight market. As tight as it is right now, I'd love to have some property in Dilworth for sale.
Yeah, we still have some property in Dilworth. But anyway, that one sold in like 3 months, and the one in South Charlotte sold within 30 days.
You did extremely well. I've got a friend that's had a house on the market in Charlotte. It's off Sardis Road in between Rama and Matthews, has been on the market for an extended period of time, and he's having a difficult time selling it. And we were at an event where we were talking to another individual that had a house over in South Park.
Yeah.
And over in the Barclays area. But the bottom line is we're sitting with this conversation, they're talking price points, and the other guy goes, well, I put my house on the market and I sold it for full price in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So, you know, location, location, location. But
it is. It's all that, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, and I heard this this information coming out the other day. You start looking at all this calamity in the mortgage markets, and it ends up to where 90% of your people are paying their payments on time. The other 10% of the market, it's somewhat of a struggle. But
yeah, see, I would say this.
Willing a lot of the current situation. I made a comment on Facebook. If they would start laying off news anchors, I think they would probably change their disposition in how they report the economy.
Yeah, I wanted to say that
more,
I just
want
to say one thing, that the Dilworth area, to me, is the art district of Charlotte.
Well,
and
sure,
that is one of the most booming areas, that the houses are so gorgeous and so characteristic that, gosh.
Well, let me add something to that. And Mike, I couldn't agree with you more. And I feel so strongly about this. This is part of the reason why I'm calling in. People need to quit listening to the news and start really doing some thinking for themselves. Property values in certain areas were overpriced. They went up beyond what anyone could comprehend.
But did you hear the initial conversation I had on that? And again, it's a personal opinion, but all this focus on the banks, and yes, that's an issue, but if the banks were issuing mortgages, where were they issuing those mortgages to? You had this huge uptick with this concept that by creating these nationally publicly traded building companies, look, those guys that were running those companies, they walked away with millions of dollars. Before this market turned, they took huge paychecks
Mike,
out
this
of them.
Is all, yeah, it's all a money-making thing. I remember I was trying to change I had a line of credit on my home. What do you call that? A home equity line, right? Within 10 minutes, I had $100,000 of credit. 10 minutes. I walked in, I signed. 10 minutes, I got $100,000. Now, I know I'm good for it, and they would know that I'm good for it. But what I'm saying is, isn't that insane? Who checked my property? Who appraised it? Who did anything about it? It's insane. So
no, I couldn't agree more.
Huh?
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, so that's what happened to so no one was checking on anyone. It was all about bundling these mortgages and selling them off to investors who would, you know, reap a high reward for that.
Well, you know, you look at the mortgage companies, and again, because I deal with those people, and basically the information they receive, this is one of those things to where, as I stated, you know, my belief is that the information they were receiving and coming from these various parties that were contracting these houses for sale, I think that's where the food chain broke down, because, you know, when you have to provide things like your employment verification records and income records and things of that magnitude, and the person pulling this together is the one that's getting paid a percentage commission on the project itself, the breakdown existed more so on the building side of it. And I'm saying those representatives that put things under contract, houses under contract, and then took those to the banking resources to get the various funding, I think too much blame has been placed on the banks, or maybe for better terms, the blame needs to be shared, because it shouldn't just rest on the banks, because they were receiving the information provided.
You know, I think that the blame is, that it should be placed on greed and in everyone's
absolutely.
Body. So everyone who put false information on their application to the banks that didn't even review the application, they didn't care, because they were selling that off to someone else who thought they were going to make a bunch of money. You know, everyone is to blame on this.
Okay, we've got to wrap this up. We're getting ready to go off the air, but I just want to say one thing. Thank you, Patty, for calling in. Thank you, Mike, for being the guest host this evening. And I'm getting many PMs in the Facebook that people have been listening in and are excited about the 10 years of a reunion coming up that we are about to undertake here. And with that, Patty, don't be a stranger.
I won't.
And we'll continue this on further. And Mike, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. This is Kathy Cook, Bright Lights Pathfinders, and you've been listening to www.bbsradio.com. We are off the air.
Bye, guys.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.